We're standing by to get the answers to our coronavirus questions from the expert. Dr. Eileen Marty is a professor of infectious diseases in the Department of Medicine at FIU. And let's say good morning to her. How are you doing there, Eileen?
Good morning, Bob. Struggling along here.
Aren't we all? All right.
A lot to do these days.
Here we go with the questions. I have six of them for you. Here's the first one. Let's say you're not a senior citizen and you're healthy. Can you carry the virus and give it to someone else while you show no symptoms?
Yes, you can. That's already been confirmed over and over, studies all over the world. Most recently, a beautiful study conducted in Germany.
How long does it take to develop symptoms?
Well, we give a range, a general range of 1 day after exposure to 12 and a half days after exposure. But most people develop symptoms about 5.5 to 6.5 days after exposure. And some people, very few, will manifest their first symptoms 14 or even 19 or even 24 days out from when they were exposed.
Hmm.
So that's what's going on here. It's a big range. And actually, I could forward you the most recent article by the Germans. They did such a beautiful, beautiful study on transmission. But one of the nice things that's in there, one of the positive bits of news, is that most people 10 days after they show symptoms are not shedding enough virus that they're likely to contaminate somebody else. And I know that doesn't sound that great, but really it is, because we were quite concerned for just how long after somebody does have symptoms are they still contagious to other people.
Got it. What's the biggest risk when you're flying? And would you fly domestically without worry right now?
Okay, so worry isn't one of my favorite words. I'm more about alertness and risk assessment for myself, and it depends on. So would I fly? It really depends on why I'm flying. You know, mm-hmm. I wouldn't do a frivolous flight right now, mm-hmm. but I would if I'm needed, as I sometimes am for special government reasons, I might fly. And in those circumstances, I'm going to do everything in my power to reasonably reduce my risk of exposure. But I have to bear in mind several things. I have to bear in mind my own risk to myself based on my age and whatever comorbidities I may or may not have. I have to take into consideration the risk if I do contract the disease, not just to myself, but the people that I live with. Who am I coming home to, right?
Right.
And the next thing I have to take into consideration is where I'm going, exactly where I'm going, and what do we know about any sustained community transmission happening where I'm going. And then, of course, there's the people on the airplane. And I have to realize right now that there may be a person on the airplane who's shedding virus that I get informed about either when I arrive or when I return, leading it to be necessary, because I'm allegedly sitting in this scenario 6 feet away from them in the airplane flight, in which case I would be asked to quarantine. And how would that impact me economically and socially? And those are part of the risk assessment that each person has to do for themselves, understanding as best they can their risks, the risk to their particular community, their neighbors, their work, and then make an appropriate decision.
A lot to think about. Do you wipe down areas of the plane, areas where you're sitting?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a simple, easy thing to do.
Got it. All right.
And you don't have to buy fancy, expensive wipes, Bob. You can just get some rubbing alcohol, put that on a tissue paper, and use that to wipe it off, because that'll be just fine.
I'm glad you said that, because I brought home a box of wipes, and Marianne told me, no, these aren't any good. It's not a disinfectant. You got to go back and get something stronger. Not necessarily true, huh?
Well, of course, there are some things that are more potent than others, but this is a very sensitive virus, and you are correct, Bob. If you scrub it off with something that has, like, you know, you buy isopropyl alcohol, that's your average inexpensive is 70% alcohol, and that's more than adequate to damage the envelope of these coronaviruses.
All right, here's my next question. Are large gatherings outside safer than ones that are indoors?
So for doing a mass gathering, we do the same thing as for travel. We have to do a risk assessment, right? So outside, it depends on where you are outside, because we know that this virus likes it, likes the temperature of around 74 degrees and prefers a humidity that's maybe about 50% humidity in the air, right? So you have to consider what your conditions are outside, how many people are outside, and so forth. All these different factors you have to take into consideration. But overall, you can have a safer outside than inside if you base it only on whether or not the virus survives well outside. But remember, when you're in close contact, whether you're outside or inside, that's ample time for virus to cross from person A to person B if they're within each other's space in that 6 foot distance.
Hmm. Is the coronavirus more easily transmitted than the flu?
Well, we're still trying to figure that out. And there's a lot of different studies going on about transmissibility. We think it's equivalent to the flu, with the caveat that, and you and I have spoken about this before, we know that persons who have influenza, the adults, one day before they show any symptoms are shedding virus, right? And we know that children with influenza, 3 or 4 days before they show any symptoms, are shedding virus. But corona is apparently shedding virus quite a long time before people show symptoms. And that is part of the reason that we're seeing such a logarithmic climb in cases.
What are the symptoms exactly of the coronavirus compared to the flu?
Well, they overlap quite a lot. And I'll be quite frank with you, the physicians that I work with are concerned, because there is that big distinction that we want to make, and yet a patient presents with fever, low respiratory symptoms, and a cough, you know, mm-hmm. especially a dry cough, but it can be a productive cough. It could be either one. It really could. And we have to test to know the difference. One of the things is, you know, you're less likely to show upper respiratory symptoms with corona, but even then, you know, there's overlap. And both diseases are going to make you feel like crap, pardon my French, and both diseases.
Uh-huh. That's a technical term, a medical term, but we get it.
Right. And both diseases are going to, you know, your muscles are going to hurt. Sometimes your joints are going to hurt a little bit. So it really, you know, you have to take all of it into consideration.
All right. One last quick question.
That's the only real way to tell them apart.
Finally, how long can a coronavirus live on a surface?
Okay, now that's a question, and it's a very important question. So if we grow it in a lab, right, under special media, and then we stick it on a surface, it's not going to last very long, because it doesn't have stabilizers when we do it that way. But if you take the coronavirus that has stabilizers, and what are stabilizers? There's the salts and mucin and sugars that are in our saliva, that are in our feces. This coronavirus is in feces as well, that is in our tissues, right? So if you put, and that's the way it comes out of human beings, with these stabilizers. So depending on the stabilizer and the temperature and the humidity, the virus can live for days, over a week and up to 9 days.
Wow. All right.
If you don't clean it off.
Got it. Dr. Eileen Marty, always great talking to you. I have to douse the phone now with disinfectant, alcohol, and bleach, but I know you'll understand. And we'll be talking to you again soon, I'm sure. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob. Take care anytime.